I cast or should I troll? Big fish alone, kinda scattered. I think I'm gonna lose my mind. So you've got to let me know, should I cast or should I troll? It's always tease, tease, tease. Why can't you be up in the weeds? One day they're high, the next so low. Maybe on rocks, I just don't know. Well, come on and let me know, should I cast or should I troll? Should I cast or should I troll now?
Alright folks, welcome to the Musky 360 podcast. It is Jay Bird Strummer, I guess, this weekend.
Hey, Steve.
Should I cast or should I troll?
Yep.
Oy vey.
That was Jones, actually, but you know.
Freaking whatever. Moving on. Been out.
What's shaking today?
I've been on the boat for like 19 days straight. I got the shakes, to be honest with you. Freaking
getting some fish though, you said yesterday, huh?
I'm on a roll, baby. I'm on a roll. It's just cool. Is what it is, and been doing that. Been watching out though, trying to avoid the Antigo Sea pig.
Oh jeez, yeah.
Folks, if you don't know your Northwoods mythology, SJ. Mm-hmm. SJ, what the
right in there with the hodag.
Yeah, right. That you've heard of the hodag. Now beware the Antigo Sea pig. Sorry, it's kind of like extrapolate from incomplete data, right?
Sure.
She's
sure.
The whatever fattest girl you've ever seen. The Antigo Sea pig.
Hey, we just had some thunderstorms roll through here an hour ago. Couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
You know, early March. So awesome.
I was just, it's crazy. I was talking to Herbeck's son earlier, Danny. Yeah. We were just shooting the shit about some stuff. And I asked him, I said, what do you think's going to happen up there? Do you think it's going to be early ice or late ice? Where you at? And he's like, a week ago, I'd say early. He said, then we just got hit and we got cold temps. So the Canada stuff, I guess they got that, you know, it's not crazy snow, but they got a little bit of snow up there and things locked up a little tighter. Jay, you're saying it's looking kind of opening up, kind of warming up. What's going on up in your neck of the woods?
It's supposed to be 40s all week, and the long range says like one day next weekend is high in the 30s. So not that great, but like I said, it just rained, so you know, it's like 45-50 degrees out. We got some rain and wind, so do a little damage to the ice, get stuff. I mean, there's not much ice to melt. That's the cool thing.
Yeah, it was never,
you know, we got that little lake in the back of the musky shop, you know,
right.
You know what I'm talking about,
right? Yeah,
so might be just, I don't know, a week or two we might be able to get out on that thing if we start, you know, if it's above freezing every day. So
okay,
that thing's
like 4 inches deep, dude.
I'm just thinking for surface bait.
For like a video or something. Yeah.
You know what I mean? You could at least do that until we get some lakes open.
Don't give anybody ideas like there's a lake behind the shop. No, there's a drainage pond behind the musky.
It looks like a lake. It's beautiful.
It is. It's full of, like when the shop and we get suckers in and there's like a random, not a sucker, it goes back there or. You know, all
well, you know, when they, you know, they do the oil changes over at Lens Truck Center.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know where the old oil goes?
No, it does not.
No, I'm just kidding.
That'd be amazing. Freaking the Lens Truck Center oil dump / musky sucker pond. Freaking Lens Auto. We could screw the environment. No, the guys at Lens, Jay, you're awful. We love the guys at Lens. Actually, you know what I'm thinking of? We got the bash coming up, they're so cool. It's one of these things, like having good neighbors is important in life. If you have a bad neighbor, it's awful. But the folks at Lens Truck Center, they're like, yeah, it's parking our parking lot, you know. Maybe somebody will see a truck. I'm about in need, Jay. I'm getting close.
Plus, they all like musky fishing over there, and they all like hockey. So, I mean,
what? How can you go wrong? And
yeah, how can you go wrong? With
we're at the bash, and every salesman's in the, at the bash. Like, if you wanted to buy a truck that day, you better come to our parking lot and find them. You know, so no, they're great guys, and you know, Jay, you got your this guy. This is unscripted. I'm being. It sounds like a plug. Like, you actually got your last truck there, which is cool.
Yeah, I got the ST there. Thing, yeah, they get some unusually cool vehicles.
It's
over
crazy.
There,
you know what Jay I mean? Has
like
this
really custom like stuff.
I know Jay's car is amazing. It's this Toyota truck he bought from this group called ISIS.
Yeah. Negative.
Got a 50 cal in the back. Folks, they got the best trucks you've ever seen. Once you wipe the blood out, it rang great.
It's got a belt fed 50 belt on a tripod in the back bed.
Did you ever see? No, sorry, we'll talk muskies in a minute.
And it's white.
I haven't talked to Jay in a couple days. I've been busy. Did you ever see the story of that dude that traded in his truck? It's a plumber, I think. Hold on.
What?
Let me find this. This is the funniest shit ever. ISIS pickup truck. I think he's a plumber. Texas okay, this is a great headline. Sorry. Texas plumber sues car dealer after his truck ends up in Syria on the front lines. So this guy, his company name was Mark One Plumbing, right? This is in 2015. God, I can't remember why I remember this. So this dude sells his freaking truck to a dealership, and he has like the decals on it, Jay, like for his business with a phone number, right?
Okay.
So he trades it in, and they're like, oh yeah, we'll take the decals off. It sells, and then somehow this thing ends up in Syria with a 50 cal in the back with his business name and phone number on the
side. Nice.
I swear on my life, I'm looking right now. Type in that it's Texas plumber sues car dealer after his truck ends up in Syria's front lines. So be careful. Don't ever have your phone number or logo when you trade in a vehicle. They put him out of business, Jay.
That's terrible.
I remember now he sued the crap out of the dealership. Because like people are calling like you're a freaking communist, right? Because he's
providing arms to the enemy.
Oh yeah, no, he just traded in his freaking truck, but not at Lynn's Truck Center. They will not sell your used car to ISIS, Jay. That's one promise they keep every time. It's above the door, right, Jay? We will not sell your used vehicle to ISIS.
Guys got to have strict guidelines to live by, you know.
And, listen, everybody's got to have like, got to have a moral code. We, you know, we won't sell your truck to ISIS. That's it. Yeah. After that, all bets are off. No, they're cool dudes. I don't know how we went down that rabbit hole, but that was a rabbit hole. Yeah, anyway,
I'm not sure.
You got that? I don't know even where we were going. So the sale, you missed the get your St. Croix in the gift card deal. We're getting to the time in the season. Getting there very quickly. Fenwick's got a rod out, Jay.
Yeah, they've got two Elite Series. HMG's just came in. That was the second lesser-priced series. I don't know, 8 models or something like that. Those came in this week. What else came in? Tons of stuff. Tons of restock.
Yeah,
Tons of St. Croix. Tons of, I mean, you name it from our vendors, we got it this week. Give me a second here.
Well, not helpful.
Pulling up
Jay.
The website.
I did.
Well, it's just a blur. It's just like we got so much stuff in. I got those Savage Gear listings up on the new Savage Blades. Yeah. So I took a lot of pictures there. We got samples of some of them, but not all of them. So I tried to
bunch of singles,
get as many images prices. Up as possible. Yeah.
Good price.
Yeah, I like that single blade. The single small blade, 8.5. Yeah.
The single is the double. Now, the single minus one, cool. Yeah, exactly. He's a single.
And he's the Burbot, too. 3D Burbot. That baby's coming out. This stuff's coming out. What were they talking? June? May or June, I
really?
Think, Steve, weren't
Jeez,
they?
That's a
Well,
you know, we had freaking don't hold your breath. but they'll be out soon. So yeah. No, it's cool. It's finally, we're getting past, we've muddled through the winter months where it's like, the Jackal Dunkel's out, you know. No, it's going to be a deluge of new stuff, I think. I mean, I don't know if there's anything else coming out. Got your Next Level Shades. We got some books back in stock. You got your Krakens, your Kraken skirts. If you don't have your catalog yet.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Your catalog's out. You got the Stewart Brothers looking fine as strawberry wine on the front.
Yo, look at those cover boys, huh?
Jeez. Oof.
Wow.
Sharp. I need an extra copy just for kissing. It looks good.
So. You know, speaking of Kraken, Steve.
Eh.
Tuesday. Kraken cool. Masterclass video.
Kraken Masterclass.
Coming your way. 21 minutes of in-depth, cool, versatile jerkbait Kraken fishing.
Did we do that in the fall when I was up there?
We did. The leaves were falling down and it was a little windy. And, you know, you were in the boat just, you know, going on a deep, deep rabbit hole of the Kraken. It was beautiful.
Yes. Yeah. Running the old snoot.
Yeah.
No, that'd be cool. So, Kraken info. Kraken info there. Hopefully,
it's good. I think it's a good video.
Very shortly here, we'll have some of the Next Level trailer hooks back in. Can't keep those made fast enough. Those aren't slave labor made. I make them myself, and it sucks. So I will get some of those done. I've been busy on L Boat. But other than that, I'm trying to think because we've got a couple questions this week about new stuff. Sort of touched on it last week. It's new, but it's old as some of the bobby baits. I'm a Titan man, boys, tighten up. But, man, bobby baits, that's kind of they're older than original sin, Jay. But there's still some magic in their heels. I'm going to try to. I talked to Jim about it. I'll try to work up a bobby bait video like this coming year. Because some of that stuff, you know, you got your old school rod laying in the garage. You got a 6'6" or your breaker rod. You can do some damage with some of those old ones. Something we were talking about on reels, right? Didn't he say 13... was bought out by Berkeley Rapple or something like that.
13 Fishing?
Yeah. Or the Z reels, those little Z reels I like.
That's my knowledge.
Somebody bought
them. Yeah, I'm not sure who's got them, but.
Well, I was trying to look.
Nothing's changed drastically over the.
Trying to see.
Months.
I think this year, I don't think there's any. I know Daiwa's coming out with a 500 size. I know that. As far as new reels, if we're gearing up.
How'd you hear about that?
What
did I tell you?
Jim told me.
Okay. Yeah, we got those coming in soon.
Got the Jim hotline. So there's a 500 size Daiwa. So you got your Tranxes and your Spanxes. And then you're going to have your Daiwas. And the 500. I'm just looking, perusing. You got the Daiwa Saltus, the new line counter there. I'm trying to see. I guess, you know, it's funny. On the reel front, it's going to be the same, except for the big changes. There are a handful of new baits this year and a handful, like you said, the rods. Fenwick is definitely, I'll just say it like it is. I don't care. Fenwick's kind of old school. You know, that was what, Jay? 70s, 80s? Fenwick was like a top dog, you would say.
They've been around for a long time. Yeah, that's
true. And so they make good stuff for sure, and they're making a resurgence here. But
complete redesign on that rod. It's nothing like anything they put out in the past. So very modern, nice.
No, they've brought back their 1974 model at 5'5". That'd be hilarious if somebody like launched a 6'6". New for 2025, the St. Croix 6'6 Master Series for $800. No, geez. You know, you got that. It's just whatever. I love gear. That's why I'm sitting here spooling just flipping through it. I will tell
Go ahead.
You heard from Don James. The master, ringmaster of the circus that is figure eight lures.
Yeah.
They're going to have the Steve's Tailgaters.
I love that name.
What? Tailgater?
It's great. Yeah, the Tailgater.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, it's a good one.
They're going to have those, I believe, Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah. Yeah, they're on the way. Yep.
They're on the way from Janesville, Wisconsin to Managua to your house. I'm telling you, if you're a creaker or a tweaker, it's going to change your life for the better. Your wife will love you more and your kids won't hate you if you get one of those. Now, it is, I had a guy shoot an email. I sort of touched on it last week. That is going to be for you shallow water guys, this rubber ripping thing. Do it with this bait because the big Colorado blade, that 8, is going to create a slow fall with a quick little spinarooski, if you will. I made that word up on the spot, Jay, spinarooski. Of the real rear willow. Mm-hmm. So you're getting like, treat it like a little Medusa or a little bulldog. Rip, let it fall. Rip, let it fall. Or you guys that know the joys of yo-yoing, right? If you know how to pick pockets, if you will. Killer for that of, oh, there's a hole in that weed bed. Let me reel over to it. Let it fall. Rip it up. Let it fall. It is a specialist spinner bait. This is not, I mean, again, you can drink 7 cans of Mickey's and throw it and turn the handle and catch fish. But this is meant to do some interesting things for you spinner bait guys. And really my answer of something, I mean, everything I sort of do with figure, I've done the meat grinder, now the tailgater, what I'm doing with these things are the mods I've done to my baits to sort of make them work. When I'm doing creaker stuff, you go, well, fish want pull paws baits, but a bulldog with its 2 treble hooks on the bottom is going to get snagged immediately, right? Or if I pull it, paws, it's behind a branch or yada, yada, yada. The spinnerbait nature of this, they don't know the difference between a spinnerbait and this. They're going, it pulled, it paused, it stopped, there's a profile. So you creakers and tweakers, that's going to be a game changer on that front for you.
I like it.
Something we were touching on about the ice, and I think I brought up like Dr. Bob, he's looking at some Iowa stuff, and you know, temps are breaking up. You're going to have, I didn't check. I should have sent a text, Jay. Of like, you got some contacts in there in the Indiana, and you know all this stuff. And if it's not already broke up or open, everything's gonna be there pretty quickly. Unless something changes drastically, there's gonna be a lot of places where guys can target pre-spawn muskies. You know, Michigan, that's wide open. The UP, all this stuff, right? You know, Illinois, that's open. I don't know about Indiana's regs, but I think they're open. I don't know if they have a closed season, but, you know, certain lakes in Iowa, I mean, people are going to be fishing in a matter of days, Joe. Mm-hmm. Literally in a matter of days where, you know, they might have to wait till April or May. So for a moment here, sort of touch on some of this pre-spawn stuff where I had the conversation in the boat today where, well, what can you do pre-spawn? Where are they staged? Well, depends on where they're at. It's a quick phase, right, where they're going to move from like deeper edges and the comfort of pockets and holes and deep water sanctuaries or break lines and hard breaks to outside of the spawning area, right? They're going to stage there first, but they're still eating. And there's kind of 2 schools of thought. You got to sort of make an assessment based on water temp, and the magic temp, Jay, is usually 55. If you sort of pin somebody down, 55 is the number, right? Where until we hit that number, they're maintaining calories, right? They might have porked up over the winter, but they need to eat to keep that. And I'm talking the big fish. They need to keep that energy level up, that calorie intake, so they're ready to go in the spawn. They're eating.
Sure.
They're fired up. Where the best way I could put it to the gentleman on the boat today is once the ice is off, pre-spawn, right? So if the ice comes off before, the spawn, you know, it's not that truncated thing where it's not every year where you can fish March and they're not going to spawn till say late April or whatever you're looking at. You've got some real opportunity to big fish that's as heavy as they get. So it's as much egg weight as there is. And you know, here's this big mature female carrying, you know, 10%, 15% more body weight, whatever it looks like. And what you need to do is sort of play with the biggest presentations you have, where what you would have been doing right before ice up, and then follow that up with some of this downsize stuff, because there's also a school of thought of, hey, they've reached max capacity. They just need a little fill me up, a little snack, right? So that's a call you're going to have to make based on water temps and what you're looking like. But it seems like these fish, you know, right before the spawn, they get really dialed in, Jay. Really nice feeding windows, really tight timed feeding windows. But if you're aware of where shallow littoral zones are or outside areas where they should be spawning, you can find a ton of fish. You know, I don't deal with close season. A lot of people don't. If you got open water, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Where this is going to be a new opportunity for a lot of people where you go, oh, this is the earliest I've fished in quite some time. And you got to take advantage of it. And like I said, treat it like it was like, you know, leading up to the ice, they might be staged. You know, if a body of water X, Y, and Z, they were staged at 12 to 15 before the ice. And we come back on the other side and we hit 40 or whatever, you might find them staged similarly where they were at before the ice came into play. So, you know, anywhere from those deep edges, I'm not narrowing it because it's such a wide habitat range, but, you know, you got to sort of play the game when you're going to have to get dialed in somehow, and starting from deep outside edges like it was pre-ice up to super shallow. You'll find fish where they're kind of waiting it out until the water temps raise up. And if you've got panfish, and I'm seeing it already, Jay, panfish moving up, I'm going, whoa, this is really early for this, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Whoa, 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 this is crazy early. Well, there's panfish up in 2-3 feet of water. And I'm pulling fish right now anywhere from, you know, the bait hits the water, crack, crack, crack on a crack, and up in the shallows, and we're getting them right off the edge till we're pulling them off of deep water or off the deep breaks, everywhere in between. So it's kind of a mixed bag for me right now, but that's kind of the what will happen is that's going to tighten up and get shallower and shallower and shallower and shallower until the spawn, right? So the most important factor you can look at starting off when you finally hit this open water is, what are your water temps like, right? And not like the superficial, you know, your skimmer on the back of your boat or whatever. Check your trolling motor, compare those. If you got a temp probe or whatever, pay attention to it. Well, we have a vibe for what that water column looks like. You know, maybe you've waited a week or two, but I mean, it seems like in the gut feel on this, there's going to be open water in a lot of places with open season soon, if not already. So make that assessment, take that pre-ice up pattern, start there while co-mingling with a shallow pattern, right? So, I mean, we're literally going from, okay, should I be throwing mag dogs all the way to, am I throwing, you know, 6-inch phantoms and Titan juniors and all this stuff up real shallow, right? So there's a big spread, but once you dial in on where the majority of actively feeding fish are, that pre-spawn bite is pretty phenomenal. You know, Jay, have you ever seen it? I'm just curious, and I don't know the answer to this. It's not rhetorical. Have you ever seen season open up there before they spawn, or is that kind of impossible?
Yeah. 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 More or less. I've seen that. I mean, I've had fish in the boat in early June. I think it was around June 10th, roughly, that had eggs in it still.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But, more than likely they're done or finishing up the spawn.
Right. Right.
During the Memorial Day weekend, which is when the Northern Wisconsin opener is. So
yeah, they try to time that out, and you always see, and I mean, again, it's not people targeting. You're always going to see some pre-spawn fish getting taken on like a walleye jig or something, or I don't even know when walleye is open. I don't care enough to pay attention, but you know, if somebody's pan fishing or whatever it is, you're always going to have that yeah. arbitrary catch. But you know, a lot of this stuff is going to open up where it's a hell of a time to get out there. It really is. It, you know, if you can get out, yeah, it's going to be cold. Yeah, the water temps are cold. That's when you can really stick a pig, Jay.
Sure.
the Antigo sea cow or sea pig. Sorry, guys. We'll explain that one day. I did get a message earlier this week via text about the bash. So the bash this year, Jay, is what, July 27th?
July 20th.
Oh, is it the 20th?
Yeah.
Hold on. I thought I said 27th last week. You sure? Let me look.
Oh, yeah.
How oh, yeah, are we?
Saturday, July 20th.
Looking here. July 20th. So if I said 27th last week, I'm an idiot. Is the bash is July 20th. 20th.
It's going to be a great one this year. Just judging from the response right now, so many vendor booths are going to be there. You're not even going to believe it. It's going to be great.
Don't tell them yet, but there's some cool stuff that's never been at the bash before. You're going to have some really cool new vendors and some really respectable companies coming out, and we'll get the Texan Pros, the best Texan Pros, possibly an appearance from the band Meat Raffle, Jay.
They're good.
They're good, folks. They do nothing but 38 special covers.
Yeah, and Foghat.
But they don't play Fool for the City or Hold On Loosely for some reason. It's really weird. Possibly an appearance from the band Meat Raffle. So it gets them in the doors, Jay.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, who doesn't want a musky show and a meat raffle?
Get the big stage, get Sea Pig up there. I mean, those guys are great live.
The Antigo Sea Pig. Good God, guys. If I could tell what we were talking, I'm just saying that to make Joe or Jay blush, because one of these days, if you catch me by yourself, say, what's the story of the Antigo Sea Pig? And I will tell you. It's a doozy. God, Jay, I'm an idiot. Sorry. I haven't drank enough. That's the problem. I'm sitting here. My tism is fired up. I'm fixated on stuff. So it's July 20th is the bash. And we've been working. Well, Jay has. I've just been barking in the background. But have worked tirelessly to get some really interesting vendors there this year. And we're going to mix things up and, you know, have some fun, Jay. Have some good old Midwestern fun.
Absolutely.
What do you say? Safe for the whole family. Speaking of, we will say this. If you have a kid, or you can steal a kid, or you can kidnap a kid, MEPS is going to give you a free bait. I know that.
Yeah.
You hire a dwarf, right? What do you call little people? I'm not trying to be offensive. Bring them, because they get a free bait from MEPS, a custom-made one, too. We
Any
know
color
that's
you want. Down.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you just keep buying them clothes. Go to Goodwill, buy a bunch of dwarf clothes, keep sending that dwarf up. You got all the bucktails you could ever need. Pretty sweet deal there. Nate S. Hey, guys. First off, love the podcast. Keep it the great work. My question is pertaining to summer muskies with rubber. I fish in Land O'Lakes late July, early August in LVD. Any recommendations for color of rubber in that lake? Jake? Or Jay, sorry, Jake. Who are you again? Jay.
Where'd you say he's fishing?
Lac Vieux d'Azur.
Okay.
He's, you know, the problem is if you're up there that late, the Lac Vieux d'Azur is just weed choked.
Yep.
You know, kind of mucky, kind of this. What I'm looking for, and that's a body of water. I've said it before. Joe used to guide it all the time. And
sure.
Yeah, I don't think it matters as much as if you're going for the tigers, and that's a notorious tiger lake. Bright is good. Not to toot my own horn, toot toot. However, you know, a titan is a hell of a bait on that lake because it's pretty dang weedless. You can run it through a lot of slop. Bright colors, you know, your oranges, your like the brain damage pattern. Something bright's going to be good. Jay, any other thoughts on that? What are you hearing the Eagle River crew and the people that are heading up there anymore? What's the modern knowledge?
Yeah, Lac Vieux d'Azur is a fairly large lake, standards for northern Wisconsin anyway. In our area, it's in Vilas County, so very weedy and notorious for weeds close to the top by late summer. So earlier in the season, the first half of the season, that is a really cool kind of shot in the dark at getting an excellent hybrid muskie or just flat out good muskie fishing. So there's some lakes like that around St. Germain too. It's the same deal. You know, yeah. You get a few of these weed lakes that before they go and get to the top and bloom out August 1st, I look at it as like the first half of the season kind of opportunity.
Yeah.
And there's certainly a ton of lakes that have a second half of the season opportunity too. So I just always call it gets sucker fished actually after the weeds kind of break up later in the fall too. So yeah. Not that you can't catch fish when the weeds are high, but we all know what that can be like. It can be a lot of maintenance. So,
well, I mean, you're
cool body water.
You're just ineffective is the problem. You know, you're working a bait in. It's like you made it 2 feet. Like I said, if you're working the right baits, you can get through a lot of the stuff. But at a certain point, if it's not a topwater on some of this stuff, you can't even get it through. But
sure,
you know, if you're going for the El Tigres, bright's always good. Your oranges, your whites, you know, anything that's stained up or weedy. I've always liked just like the Iceman Titan, the white. All the way around, I was always pretty good. Yeah, or anything flashy. I've always thought, and I'm thinking less watercolor, Jay, more flash, because you go, something's got to sort of penetrate the thickness of those weeds. You got to catch some attention. You know, we've talked about in the past that weeds, dense weeds, are muting vibration, right? So make it a blatant visual, right? Really like stark, whether it be black, whether it be white, something that is like a hard profile where he's down buried in the weeds and he looks up and he catches a glimmer of it and he might even feel it. Or if it's flashier, you get some visual appeal.
Hey, thick weeds, thick cover. What don't you want to be doing speed wise?
Burn everything, Jay.
Right, exactly. You don't want to be doing that.
That's what I would
slow down, work the pockets, and give them a chance to eat it.
Work the pocket and let them eat it. Right,
Jay. Do you
have a mouse in your pocket? JSE's Mouse Pocket will be performing July 20th at the Muskie Shop Bash.
Oh, you wait till what we got to see what we have in store for the bash this year. It's going to be fantastic.
Is Pocket Mouse opening for Meat Raffle by chance?
I don't know about the bands, but you know, we're working on that too.
The band. Please, for the love of God, can we pull that off? Horrible. You're trying to buy baits, and Jay's up there going, Ace of Spades! Space of AIDS. Anyway,
should I cast or should I troll now?
Well, whatever. Hey, Jay and Steve, I know you both use cranes, but I was wondering if you ever go with a 305, 306, 307. I feel like I'm on a hunting show. 305, 306, 307, or the 105?
305, Steve.
305. Beck and Nam. We were. I almost had a Gran Torino moment here on the show. I can't do that publicly. Back in Nam, you got your 3-0-5, your 3-0-6, your 3-0-7, and a 1-0-5. My primary lake is panfish based. I was thinking these might be a good option. If you do use them, is it in situations like this? Any other specific application reasons would you go with these over the 200 series? Thanks for all the great content and laughs. You guys are the best. Yes, we are the best, Jay. We are the best, and this guy said something. So. I got written proof. AJ said we're the best.
Hey, well, back to what he's talking about. He's talking about the 200 series cranes. That's a minnow cut, right? The 300 right. series, the 100 series, that's kind of like a shad sunfish cut to the belt, to the shape of the bait. So you can see where he's going at that.
Underutilized.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, when we talk about, now we've bantered around so many numbers. The six and the sevens, there's 206 and 207s, right?
Yeah, 208s.
Yeah. 208s, okay. Of course, we're going backwards. So the smaller, the bigger the number, the smaller the bait, right? I can't remember what this. Why, folks? Just name it something different.
The last number on a crane is the length of the bait.
Jeez Louise.
There you go.
Thanks, all Rain Man of musky baits.
You got it, Chief.
What hook am I thinking about? It's Mustad 5662, discontinued. Sorry. Stop, listen.
You want data? I've got it.
Well, my relationship with Jay is very much like the Rain Man Dustin Hoffman movie. I call him at least twice a week, ask him what a hook is. What hook's on this bait, Jay? And you're like, Misty. I'm a very good driver. But it'll end like Lenny from Mice and Men. And speaking of Mouse, Jay, tell everybody about the time you played Algernon in the school production of Flowers for Algernon.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Anyway, moving on. Somebody laughed.
There you go.
Someone out there laughed because that shit was funny. Anyway, so goes back to your band name Pocket Mouse. So that smaller profile, that smaller bay, yeah, if you're on the downsize, there's just bodies of water where flat out, you know, big muskies are going to hit small baits. You look at, say, like the Lungeon 22 shorts and all this stuff, these little baits, we're not that far removed. When we talk these cranes, Bill Crane figured out way before those dudes, right? Far more buoyant, and they have their time and place. We're just talking pre-spawn. Well, post-spawn or little snack morsel-sized baits, that's perfect. And I don't think necessarily like it's a perch profile or a shad profile as much as just like the right vibrational profile with the right target size. Because cranes kind of have that thing. It's undeniable. But there's downsized cranes where post-spawn, I break out a couple of small cranes, go back in the way back machine, Jay, to the AC Shiner, double O's, right?
Okay.
Which is a balsa wood crank from Charleston, West Virginia. I got a pile of them. They just magically pull fish. So to say, hey, this is the game plan, you got to be on the right body of water. But if you're on a solely panfish, bluegill, kind of crappie body of water, I wouldn't be afraid of that. Or a shad-based body of water where those are going to be some excellent post-spawn baits, right? Now, I don't think the muskie, you got to realize, in the way a fish, generally, a muskie perceives a bait is from behind, right? So the cut of the body, from the side profile matters way less than the rear view and the vibrational profile. Vibrational profile is all, right? So I wouldn't get freaked out if you're going, hey, I do really well on slammers and cranes and Booker shallow raiders throughout the course of the season, but maybe I need some really buoyant downsize presentations early post-spawn. Those little cranes will be the ticket. I've done well on them. I wouldn't say it's something I'm doing now because, again, your lunging stuff and the longevity there or you know, just straight out like a Livingston Lures Howler or something like that or a Strike King or, you know, that time frame where I'm quote-unquote busky fishing, there's some durability there. But if you're on a body of water like it's shallow, you need the buoyancy of a crane. I think they're a great option. Jim, based on your experience, what, if anything, does barometric pressure matter and how does it affect fishing success? Okay. Spent a lot of years documenting things. I've got my database, Jay. Welcome to the Muskie database of all my years of guiding and fishing. I used to log the actual barometric pressure. And taking a side street here, me and Dr. Bob were talking about on the boat where barometric pressure. Well, Jay, if your ears pop, right, you go, huh, there's a pressure change. Do you stop eating entirely for the day? Right?
No.
If you're like, you might be a little bit, you know, you get your days where, you know, that sleepy, for us, it's like this opposite of muskies, but, you know, you get that nice drizzly day and you go, I'd love a grilled cheese and some soup and just lay in bed. You know, we've all been there. Maybe I'm too effeminate, but I have those days, right? I never get the luxury to do it, but the weather's cruddy and you're like, I'd like to just curl up and do nothing. You know, sometimes weather affects you or weird, whatever, but
sure,
for fish, you know, a muskie can go from 20 feet to 0 feet in the flick of a tail, and there's no big influence. And I don't equivalent. One thing I say is this. You'll hear people talk about barotrauma and all this stuff about how deep a muskie is staged and you pull them up. We're talking about just pure barometric pressure and its effects. It's kind of gravitational pressure effect or lack thereof, the change on the surface. I've given up on it entirely. I apologize. You know, I'm done with it. And what I've talked about in the podcast before, well, if we have a big barometric pressure shift and we have all this change, right, Jay? There's a relationship with frontal movement, right? So we have a big change in the barometer. Well, usually there's a front has moved through and things change. Well, guess what? Storms are good because it gets real cloudy and things are happening, right? And it moves in and it looks like dusk for half the day. Wow. Well, muskies don't see really well in bright light, so they take advantage of this and they become more active. Then we have high bright sun and dead flat calm where the light penetrates really deep. I have changed the way I fish. I think I've said it before. When it is high bright sun, dead flat calm, I have changed the way that I fish. Right, I need baits that run at speed, at depth, deep. Because the muskies have just moved deeper where they can see. To me, it's not cold front, warm front anymore. It is bright or dark. And I don't mean bait color. I'm no longer concerned with frontal stuff. I hate to say it. I sort of had this turning point. You know, let's all cross our legs and wear robes and go, you know, I'll be your guru of how I approach it. Where I'm done with it.
No, I know where you're going with this.
It's bright and it's dark.
Yeah.
A muskie's caloric needs do not change. Now, things that I address. I just came off this a perfect example, well-timed thought process. So, I've been on a bite now for 2 weeks with Krakens, Jay. Right? Just... You know, and it feels good. And every dog has these day and at different times in your fishing or, you know, as a guide, you know, where you're just like, well, I know we're going to get the bite. There's no question, right? I know we're going to get it. We walk out. It's going to take some time, but at some point during this day, we're going to hook up. We're going to get them in the net, blah, blah, blah. Everybody leaves happy. I've been that way for a hot minute now, right? I know what they'll eat. I know where they're at. All I'm adjusting with the weather is how I'm presenting. That's it. Period. So when it has been cloudy and has been overcast, I'm running like the 14 gram weight in the Kraken. So it's running above their head. When it is high bright sun like it was today, and I actually got sort of my first kind of not sunburn, a little sun on the old skin, if you will. Kind of bright. Well, add some more weight and guess what happened? The same thing. Now, a lot of that is from panoptics where, you know, I'm going, okay, slow down. The classic thing, it's high, bright sun, dead, flat, calm, and things are shitty, right? Slow way down. Well, I've said it before and I'll say it again, my friends. When you slow down your presentations in general, minus crankbaits or buoyant baits, say, look, let me back it up, Jay. What does the dogma of musky fishing say to throw in a cold front? Glide baits, right? Or rubber. Am I correct? Hello? Are you alive? Yeah. So the dogma of musky fishing is in a cold front, throw glide baits or rubber and work them slowly. Okay. Well, a slow worked glide bait or slow presentation of a rubber bait, guess what it does? It achieves more depth, right? You're getting down to where the fish are. If you run a bait in high bright sun, whether it's a cold front or a warm front or just a frontal movement, well, The fish can't see it. The closer you close the gap, the closer it is to the muskie, the more likely, the higher the likelihood is that he'll react positively to it. And I'm seeing fish that are coming out in 20 degree temperature drops, right? Like the worst of the worst of the worst, like stuff that should never work. They're coming out with their hair on fire because I'm getting baits down where they're at and I'm working them at speed, right? Spent a lot of years of like tippy tap and glide baits, tap, tap, fall, tap, tap. Now I'm looking for heavy baits that work deep and fast because speed's a trigger. So I do want to slow down, but I don't want to get it, the creepy crawlies because that's how you get follows. And so I'm no longer paying attention to cold front, warm front. I'm going, well, what's the level of light penetration where I need to be working baits? If my bait is continually below the level of light penetration, whammo blammo. You know, the old experiment. Let's pretend we have a weed bed. Just a concept for you. We have a weed bed in the North Woods, and we know it has muskies in it, right, Jay? And this weed bed goes from 0 to 8 feet. And we launch 30 minutes before sunrise, and we get off the water 30 minutes after dark. But the entire time we throw a topwater bait, and it's a bright, sunny day. Well, we'll probably engage a fish at sunrise, and we'll probably engage a fish at sunset, but the rest of the time it's going to be a mute point in general, right? Present to the fish. Stop doing what you want to do and do what needs to be done.
Yeah.
What needs to be done is we need to present to the fish at a depth that they can see the bait. You know, we talked about muskies can't dilate their eyes. They can't do this. They're going to get down in a place where they're functional for the vast majority. Especially one that's hungry. One that's dormant and kind of reacts to the vibration, comes out lazy. He has, I can't help himself, but he doesn't hit it. That fish that needs to feed, right, is going to stage himself in such a manner where he has an advantage. Where's the advantage at? Where it's a low light place. The cool thing about water, right, is water refracts, not refracts, it disperses light, right? There's refraction. There's all this stuff going on. So the deeper we go, guess what it is, Jay? The darker. Even in gin clear water. So the clearer the water, the deeper they go in a cold front. And we've always said, well, fishing's cruddy when the barometer changes. No. Our presentations are crummy when the barometer changes. Put the bucktails away. Or, you know, you look like The Spanky Baits Whiplash, this gigantic spinnerbait. See, you've been on a spinnerbait on big spinnerbaits. Well, now get that super Mondo heavy one and throw it out there and slow roll it. You got to present to where the fish are. That's just where I'm at, because my thought is this. I remember saying on the podcast, so let's take a Wisconsin lake, or take any lake. It doesn't matter where you're at. But a small lake, right? The amount of BTUs of energy it takes to warm that thing up from frozen to 70 degrees is unbelievable.
Sure.
You know, we have a gaseous orb in the sky burning, right? Irradiating us daily. That's why we all get the maladies, right? So you have radiation for a long time during the summer, and where, you know, this heat transfer is coming from this burning gas giant, and it's incalculable energy. Well, it gets cold for 2 days. How much of the surface temp does it really strip? It's negligible. And if you start paying attention to where the fish actually are, which is, you know, muskies don't spend that much of their day in the top 2 feet of the water. They spend some time there, but until it starts impacting like 4 or 5 feet down, it really doesn't change the game.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Right? I mean, you look at it. If temp cold fronts had that much of an impact other than lighting, right? That constant retreat. And I talk about, like, say in the book, And next level muskie fishing. The muskies use deep water as a refuge, and they come up shallow to feed. And the synopsis of that is they come up to the shallow places advantageous. Right? Think of what I'm saying, which is this, is, you know, they don't come up to a shallow place where they don't have a tactical advantage. They come up as shallow as they can where they have an ambush tactical advantage because they don't want to work hard for it. They want to eat and they want to be done. Right? Big meal, go back, metabolize, set it on their duff, repeat. They don't get bored. They don't have feelings. But they're also not going to come up and, like, I've seen guys do it. We have a cold front and they're throwing bucktails and they're burning them. Not going to happen. Right? You might, however, take a bucktail, make the heaviest bucktail you've ever seen and burn it where it's burning 6 feet down on a bomb cast. You might make something happen. The muskies have to have two things to eat something. They have to perceive it with their lateral line and they have to close the gap visually. Right? Sometimes they see it and then they engage. Sometimes they feel it and they engage. But there needs to be some kind of combination thereof. Not always. Right? I've caught fish that literally are blinded in both eyes. And there's been studies done where they blinded. They can feed one without the other. But a healthy fish is using a combination of visual and lateral line. But predominantly lateral line. But to sort of close the deal, they need to be able to see the bait. Right? So we need to go deeper when it's brighter and shallower when it's darker. That is the easiest way to approach this. Because looking at, you know, we got enough stuff that feels mythological in our sport. Moon, I've been trying to explain moon phase for like ever to people on the boat. Like if they're just not in the know, and it's fine, I'll be like, hey, muskies have been really moving on the minor, right? Well, what's the minor? Well, it's this off, you know, just be prepared and I'll tell you when. I'll give you 15 minutes warning because it seems like things are moving, you know, and then you add in like barometric pressure. It's a lot of numbers and a lot of data that you can just kind of go, well, it's the bite's off. No, they're there and a hungry fish is going to eat. That's it. I've caught tons of fish in conditions where no one is catching fish, whether it be in Canada, and there's like people are just getting absolutely hammered at the lodge and you go, well, we got two. Well, what are you doing different? I'm fishing deep. I'm fishing, you know, ticking and clicking the bookerism, right? Get down where the fish are. Don't make them work for it. And a lot of that systemic of, you know, they might perceive it on their lateral line, but they're blinded when they look up and they go, well, I'm not going to waste the time doing that because I can't triangulate on where it's at. But if it goes 2 feet over their head or a foot over, they go, oh, I see you. I feel you. You're dead. So it's play to the level of light penetration. It's so important. That old thing, Jay, how many times you've seen it in the Northwoods where crappy conditions and people are scoring on tannic water. Well, tannic water, guess what it does? It eats up light. It's darker. Fish remain shallower. Ugh. Anyway, moving on. Sean, are many big pike caught in the figure eight in the USA? No, they are not.
No.
I've caught pike in the first turn. We caught like a lazy J when we come and do a little turn.
Sure, sure.
But yep. As far as like full turnarounds, not, I mean, you'll hear a guy every now and again. Well, I caught one in eight. Yeah, but not enough that if I'm a piker, I'm guessing Sean's a Euro guy. Hello, Sean. Not here, seeing enough evidence that that's kind of like a tactical great thing to do. You know, where we're going, hey, let's figure eight for pike. Good segue. I'll be in the Netherlands here shortly, Jay. You got the Kraken video coming out. Wait till you see this one, boys. Oh, it's going to be juicy and weird European piking. So, Elmer will have an espresso. Might wear a beret, Jay. What do you think?
You should take Elmer with you.
He's already coming.
Oh, good.
He told me he had some unfinished business in France. he bought a one-way ticket too, which is weird, but Said he had some unfinished business in France.
Good one.
Oh, sorry. Robbie Densmore. Robbie. Sorry for the last name. Robbie. Oh, my God. I've never laughed so hard in my life at that last podcast. I was in tears. You guys are great. Thanks so much. Okay, so, yeah, he heard the Booker intro, which was just insanity. Jerry.
The movie trailer. Yeah.
Psycho Froggy. Rides right. Again. Sorry, Joe. Joe called me the next day. He's like, what is this shit? I was like, I'm trying to help you out, bro. He's like, yeah, great, man. This is the gift I give to you of me getting yelled at by people. Jerry, I recently retired and decided to get back into muskie fishing. I'm sorry. You'll be working again soon, Jerry. You'll burn all your retirement money on muskie baits. It's been over 30 years. That's okay. My question is, I was gifted a pair of new Mojo St. Croix 8-foot heavy action fast rods. Will that be one long enough, decent all-around rods? Have an arsenal of rubber, bucktails, topwater, glides, crankbaits? Thank you. 8-foot heavy action Mojos. I'll say this. If you're fishing out of a boat that sits low to the water or you're shorter stature, you'll be fine, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you're fishing out of a Prince Craft or a Lund or a Tracker or a Big Deep V and you're off the water, Jerry, if you got to bend over to figure eight, get a longer rod. If you got to crane your back or your neck to do it, get a longer rod. The big rods are very helpful for two simple things without going down the rabbit hole. You might think, well, these huge 9-foot, 9'6" rods are unwieldy and hard to throw. Actually, they're a larger fulcrum, right? So less energy to throw it further, bigger baits. Mm-hmm. And you know, neither Jay nor I are short people in stature. And when you can stand flat footed without bending over into a figure eight, you're in a much better position, right? Opposed to back in the day where we had 8s, 8s, 6s, like every time the bait comes in, you're leaning over, right?
Yeah, lurching forward. Where's all your body?
Right. And then at the end of the day, I can't tell you how many times Guy and I come back. Oh, my God, my back is killing me.
Yeah.
So that's the benefit there. What I would do is get out on the water on whatever vessel you're fishing out of. And you go, hey, I'm doing a pretty good wide figure eight without bending and doing this and doing that. Now, if you're a retired dude and, you know, you're fishing out of a high wall boat or, you know, say you got an old tie or something that sits off the water. If you're bending over, get a longer rod, period. You know, save your back. That means more cast, more time on the water, more enjoyable. That's the only thing. But it's all about the right fit. We've said that, you know, picking a musky rod is a personal decision, Jay. It's your choice.
Very personal.
It's very personal. That's why they have at the musky shop, they have the rod fitting room. There's a curtain. Right? So no one can see. That's how personal it is. Bryce, love the show. What are some of your favorite lures for spring in the Midwest? Spring. Rumspringa. Lures in the Midwest, Jay. Let them fly. You know the answer. Here she blows.
Early season?
In the Midwest.
Don't overlook rattle traps.
Yeah.
Bookers, luncheons. Don't overlook small slammers and small cranes. 206 cranes, 5 and 6 inch slammer, 6 inch fatty slammer, small bucktails, like the 500 frame size, like the MEPS musky killer size. Frenzy IC7, the new one. That's a downsized bucktail. If you're throwing blades, that's the right size. You want to stick with medium and less frame format size and small twitch baits that you can stop and go with, and absolutely Titan Juniors.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever your favorite glide bait may be, something that you could work very slow with. A little
soft tail, yeah.
That's a good one. That would be a great choice.
Yes. All those downsized baits. I mean, early season is downsized. That's it. So
yeah.
You know, 6 inches, 4 inch crankers, you know, somewhere in that neighborhood. Like you said, your Titan Juniors, that's the thing. The bait categories don't change, the size changes. And no matter what, back to just general, you know. If you're going to fish all season, you need to have those downsized baits for these bad fronts, or just sometimes they just want small stuff. So, you know, hence the reason we end up with rooms like the Bait Cave here, where it's might as well be Musky Shop South. It's full to the brim, you know. You're going, holy crap. But you need, you know, micro Medusas through mega monsters and all this stuff. So we're playing the odds. But early season, have that accoutrement, Jay, of those downsized presentation. Sam, do you think that pressured muskies, say in a metro area, I'm betting metro Minneapolis, but we'll go from there. Do you think they forget what lures they saw after the ice? Interesting. I don't know.
I don't think anyone does.
You know, it's one of these deals where I've heard guys say, if they hit blades once, they'll never hit them again. You know, and then I've seen like fish that hit the same bait 2 days in a row. And you're like, oh, we caught him yesterday.
Maybe it's not as much as what they see, but what they have felt in the past and fallen for.
Which might
make more sense.
Again, you talk about the stagger blade thing where everybody's freaking on the stagger blades and are catching fish again, where, you know, double nines didn't do it, but 8-9s and this, it might be vibrational. I think the vibration is far more important than, say, the visual, especially on something like blades. You know, if it's truly pressured fish, they've seen a lot. They've seen a lot. So I wouldn't think that, you know, just because they had a little time under the ice that they're going to, I don't think there's a, let me put it this way. I don't know how much they remember, but there's not some reset button like, oh, we're dumb again. Here we are. Catch it, you know, like break out the double tens. I'm going to fall for that one yet again. I don't think that's the case per se. I don't think, you know, if last year they got smoted on, you know, I don't think they're going to just go, oh, I don't think there's a reset button. But also, I think if you change things up, you know, the biggest thing I've heard is another Dr. Bob thing of like how important execution is on pressured fish. You know, perfect figure eights. You can't do cruddy figure eights and doing something different. I mean, especially on some of these bodies of water where there's more boats hitting them than there are fish in the lake by the end of the year.
Well, I mean, you know, towards the end of the season, I mean, look at the biggest fish of the season to get caught in the Metro Lakes or any, you know, high, you know, they're getting caught on baits that are being seen year round. They're not getting caught on some newfangled, unbelievable device called, you know, Tom's Leaping Lizard or something like that, you know,
Leaping Wizard. Before. Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know, they're getting caught on the Magnum Bulldog or something relatively standard. You know,
it was the right presentation,
productive
the right
time. Been around for a while, so
sort of like that 58 that's in the pond behind the musky shop, but nobody can go fish for him.
It's in there.
It's in old Mo. So, boys, I guarantee there's like a 14-inch fathead minnow in there, and a carp. So, you brought it up.
I just want Chernobyl see type fish in there.
Oh yeah, I just want to see guys back there just launching bombs with pounders behind this shop and that holding and that ditch pond. They sit on the podcast. There's a 59 3/4 in here. Old Iron Jaws, they call him.
The old Mossback.
Oh, Mossback. Jingle bells. He's covered in bucktails. There are no muskies in that pond. It's a joke. We got Fred in there. Remember Fred? We have him in there like knee deep for that one video. He's talking about getting
leaked. Yeah, just get in there, Fred. I'll film you.
Yeah, he's all
here. Hold this
out.
Net.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I ain't getting in there. That's how you get leeches.
Yeah.
You know, don't.
It could happen.
It could happen. Anyway, guys, be looking out. It's going to open up sooner than later for a lot of you folks. You know, yeah, it just is. Think about that game plan. Start now. If you're hearing rumors of open water, get out as soon as you can because that pre-spawn bite is dynamite, JJ.
Yep.
Huh?
Yeah, get out. Good luck. Have a great spring, guys.
You're Thanks, Dad.
Your kids have a great time.
You kids, be careful out there.
Be careful out there. Don't be getting high on deuce balls. So anyway, Jay, say goodnight.
Wear your life vest.
Later.